Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome to the Giants Talk Podcast. Here's Alex Pavlovich and Cole Kuiper. I know those guys.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Giants Talk. I'm Cole Kuiper here with Alex Pavlovich, and we're going to talk Giants baseball with you every Monday and Thursday right here at the NBC Sports Podcasting Network. Giants Talk is brought to you by Wendy's. Get the breakfast you deserve with Wendy's 2 for $4. That's 2 fresh-made breakfast sandwiches for just $4. Price and participation may vary, and I might head first thing tomorrow morning and do that because I love myself a breakfast sandwich.
I do as well. I think the more this goes on, the more it's just making me hungrier week after week to go and actually take advantage.
Yeah, we're going to have to Alex Eats and Cole's Lunch ourselves a little bit of Wendy's. Right off the bat, Giants made an unexpected move I don't think anyone had on their bingo card in signing 37-year-old Scott Kazmir, who hasn't appeared in the big leagues since 2016. Right off the bat, first response thoughts. Let's hear them.
I think I laughed right off the bat. not because it's a bad move or anything like that, just because it was like, look, we've grown so accustomed to just the Giants looking anywhere for pitching and anywhere for a contribution. And you hear something like Scott Kazmir and you go like, my first reaction was, I don't think I've seen Scott Kazmir for 5 years. And that was just in my head. Like, and then you look it up and you're like, oh yeah, we actually haven't seen him for 5 years. So it's just such a Giants move, such a Farhan Scott front office move. You have to kind of love it. Like they're going to, what do you have to lose, right? Like he's on a minor league deal. He's going to make very little money if he makes it to the big leagues. Would be an incredible story if he makes it to the big leagues. That was my first reaction. My second reaction was I think just it made me feel really old because I tweeted it and I wrote the story. And then Christian Arroyo, forever Giant, former Giant, he sends me a DM and I hope he doesn't mind that I'm outing him here. But he goes, I grew up rooting for that guy. We're getting to the point where like if he was still here, like we're rapidly getting to this point with a lot of these guys who are sticking around for a while that their kids were their teammates and their opponents who grew up playing them in video games, grew up rooting for them. So, and I was thinking about it too. I went back and looked, like I was a sophomore in college when Scott Kazmir got into the big league. So it's been a long time.
I'm most excited about, I think returning to 2016 as an organization will help set this universe back on track. I have this theory that at some point during game 7 of the 2016 World Series, something happened in the space-time continuum. There was that rain delay, the Cubs came back, and they won the World Series, and something ruptured. Politics got real weird, a pandemic happened. Just, it seemed like society started crumbling a little bit. So I think with this move, bringing Scott Kazmir back, we're gonna kind of reset the universal balance here. And things will hopefully start to get back to normal. That's my hot take. It's a lot of weight resting on Scott Kazmir's shoulders, but I think we can do it.
This is our third episode, and this is the first time I'm going to say I'm disappointed in you as a Giants fan, because everybody knows that it goes back to the Matt Duffy trade in 2016. That was what really set the universe spinning in a different direction. The curse of Matt Duffy, the curse of Skeeter, whatever you want to call it. But that was a few months earlier. So, yeah. But, yeah, that's how long it's been. Like, it's about the last time this guy was in the big leagues, Matt Duffy was a Giant. So it's been a while.
Yeah, I mean, that's all you have to say right there is think about it. It feels like a decade ago we were rooting for Matt Duffy and his big old fat cat. And that's the era of baseball we're talking about.
The Giants were good the last time he was a big league pitcher. So it's been a while.
Local kid, Sam Long. He's apparently opening some eyes. We're hearing a lot of good things about what he's doing in Arizona so far. I know you've been able to talk to him. What do you think?
Yeah, so it's my favorite part of spring training, and usually I get to do this in person. So this is unfortunate this year that you don't get to walk up and meet a guy and just ask for his story. I remember doing that last year with Chad Trump, just getting to know him, and you start to hear his story and see how excited he is. And I was like, oh, this is going to be a guy that, like, if he's in the big leagues, Giants fans, I think, are really going to like him. And we don't get to meet him this year, but we're on these Zooms, and early on, like day one or day two, Gabe Kapler is like, you know who was lighting up in the bullpen today? It was this kid, Sam Long. Know a little bit about him. He's 25 years old. He went to Sac State. He grew up in Sacramento. And then a couple days later, we asked Joey Bart, who stood out to you, and he goes, Sam Long. And he's like, actually, Buster told me about Sam Long. And he's like, he was really impressive. And then Gabe mentions him again after that. So had to get him on the phone, had to figure out his backstory, and really is an incredible story. Like the kind of ones you see in spring training and the kind of person you root for. He went to Sacramento State, grew up a Giants fan, huge fan of Barry Bonds, used to come down a little bit. He actually did something I did as a kid. I grew up here as well. Went to more A's games and Giants games because it was so cheap. So we talked about that. He's like, I'm sorry, I went to a lot of A's games. I'm like, I don't blame you. Like Wednesday night, I think it was $2 to get in and $1 for a hot dog. So a lot of us in the Bay Area did that. But he gets drafted by the Rays, not thrown very hard. They turn him into a side armor. He was actually pretty good for a couple years in their minor league system. They released him. He was kind of stunned. They released him 2 weeks before the start of the season in 2018. Goes home, and he thinks, you know, I'm an 18th round pick, like not throwing very hard, just got released by a pretty smart organization. Let me start thinking about the future. So starts taking EMT classes, thinks he's going to be a firefighter. Tyler Rogers did the same thing when he was in AAA. These guys start looking ahead, and he starts doing that, goes back to school in the fall, and just decided halfway through the fall semester, like, I want to give it one more shot with baseball. So we're seeing so much of this now on Twitter. You see workout videos from guys, and we've seen it with the Giants. I mean, they have a belief that they can improve people when they get to the big league level and as they get older. And Sam goes back to his old arm slot. All of a sudden, he's throwing 92, 93. Starts to get a little bit of notice. He's setting up a showcase. And his gym puts a video out on Twitter and tagged the Pitching Ninja and his Flatground app, which is doing a great job of helping guys get exposure. Wakes up the next morning and has 50,000 views, and the White Sox call and say, can we sign you before you do this showcase? So did that for a couple of years, was a free agent, and the Giants called him and offered him a minor league deal, a non-roster invite to spring training. They were the only ones to give him that right away, and now he's in the Giants clubhouse and impressing the right people.
Awesome, and I love to hear that story about essentially a tweet going viral, getting this guy to the big leagues. He's like, I don't know, someone can give me a better comp than this, but he's like the Justin Bieber of Major League Baseball in that sense.
It's becoming more and more common. Do you remember DJ Snelton, the big Snelt, according to Bruce Bochy? He did that too. So it's something you see more and more now, but just a cool story. And this guy who used to be throwing mid-high 80s, he throws 95 now, has a good curveball, a good changeup, and just has come up over and over again in the first week or so here. So he hasn't pitched above A ball. So we're talking about a guy who, if they turn him into a starter, we're probably talking Richmond or maybe back home in Sacramento, but just somebody you might see down the line. And if he makes it to the big leagues, you know, an incredible story to get back.
I appreciate that the Giants have a roster full of potentially really cool stories.
It's really good for me as a beat writer.
Have you talked to any of the other players to know, like, I don't know, I'd be very curious to find out what a guy like Brandon Crawford or Brandon Belt would have done as a backup career, like an EMT for Sam Long, had baseball net panned out. Maybe that's a topic we got to dive into after a little research on a later day.
Yeah, that's a great question. Crawford would probably tell you he'd be a DJ or something. Belt, I have no idea. You know what? Belt would tell you, he famously says he was the best athlete in every sport in his small town in Texas. So he would tell you he would have made the Olympics as a swimmer or something.
Another guy that's getting plenty of buzz in Arizona is Lamonte Wade Jr. Not doesn't have that local story, but I'm still curious to know what you think of him. He's got a solid on-base percentage in the minors, 27 years old. Not a lot of pop in his bat, but maybe something the Giants can work on in the clubhouse this year.
Yeah, somebody, you know, they like these projects, like these guys who have these skills that they feel like if they can just get a little bit more out of them, they turn into something more. And I'm not going to compare him to Mike Yastrzemski, but I will say Mike Yastrzemski in the minors showed a good approach. He showed that he had a good idea, a good all-around game. And he just needed to fix a couple of things. And he never hit more than 15 homers in the minors. He gets called up and hits 21 in not even a full season for the Giants 2 years ago. So Lamont has not had a lot of power in the minor leagues. I think one double-digit season, 40 homers total in like five minor league seasons. But a .389 on base percentage, just a really good idea of what he's doing at the plate. And it was funny when I talked to him, I was like, I went back and looked at your big league home runs, and there's one he hit in the second deck there in Minnesota, like to dead center, just an absolute shot, the kind of thing that if you're Donnie Ecker and Justin Vealy and Dustin Wynn, you look at it and go like, well, the power's there, we just need to find it. And I'm like, do you remember that? And he starts laughing, and he's like, yeah, I mean, I have two home runs in the big leagues, so that was the second one. So I do remember that, but there's some power there. Is last week we talked about the Gabe Kapler-isms, and one of them, when you talk about a guy's physicality, is he loves to talk about their engine, loves to talk about Jalen Davis having just a great engine. And said the same thing about Lamont, and he was like, look, we've seen it from Jalen, we've seen it from Yastrzemski. These guys have the potential to hit for power. Just have to get him there. And if they can get him there, they're going to have a pretty good player because he can play all three outfield spots, reach his base at a high clip. It's a matter of doing it at the big league level. So, you know, Connor Joe also had a high on-base percentage in the minors. It didn't work out. But, again, it's something where, you know, Sean Anderson didn't have a spot in this bullpen. It didn't cost him a whole lot. And potentially is a guy who I think we're going to see this year just because he's a left-handed bat who can play center field.
You said you're not willing to compare him straight up to Yaz, but I have a quote here in your article from Cap saying, quote, similar to Yaz. I'm going to cut it off there for my narrative purposes, but that's good news for mine.
Yeah, it's I think you grabbed a small part of that quote, but that was well done. He definitely, my ears perk up as a writer when we're sitting there on those Zooms and you hear him compare a guy even the smallest extent to Yastrzemski, you're like, okay, that's going in my story.
Another outfielder Giants like to always talk about is Barry Bonds. If you're listening to this podcast, I almost guarantee you have some very fond memories of Barry Bonds. And did you see the little show he did on Dom Smith's Instagram show?
I did. That was a pretty cool idea, whoever set that up.
Love it. But one of the questions they asked him was, what are two modern pitchers you'd like to face off against? And two guys he answered were Kershaw, which I think would be a Giants fan's, and maybe even a Dodgers fan's dream to watch that matchup. The quote was, I'd like to face Kershaw because he's got that big, slow curveball that can be challenging to left-handed hitters. So he's picking a guy he knows might be able to get him out just for the challenge. Got to respect the game there from Bonds. And then the second one, drum roll, please. Bonds wants to face Bumgarner.
Yeah, that would have been fun. Kershaw would have been fun too, but the famous Bumgarner story when he came up to camp is like a, I don't even, 19-year-old, I think, 18-year-old maybe, and he asked Matt Cain, how do I pitch to Manny Ramirez because he's in the other lineup? And Matt Cain was like, you just have to throw him inside. So Bum just goes out there and busts him inside like three times. I think he struck him out. Like, he's not afraid of anybody. And would not have been afraid of Bonds. So that would have been a really fun matchup. And would not have been afraid to throw it inside on him and buzz him a little bit. That's the one that, you know, what was that thing? What if baseball or whatever? There was a, like you could put like fake lineups together back in the day. That's the one I would want to see is Bumgarner versus Bonds.
Love to see that situation where Bonds hits one and watches it a little too long.
Yeah, that would be – the little spin he used to do with the clap, I don't think that would go over very well.
We'd have a Giants versus Giants fictional fight on our hands, and I'm here for it. Speaking of home run hitting legends, as you may know by this point in our podcast, we're joined on Thursdays by famous MLB former slugger Dwayne Kuiper. So he's joining us shortly. We have some fun questions we want to ask him, from Sean Jelly to spring training stories. And everything in between.
All right, as we do every week, we're going to bring Dwayne in to talk a little Giants. Dwayne, you're about to go down to Scottsdale, so you're going to have a better view than anybody. But before that, we're going to talk more general things. And one thing I'm writing about this week, and one person I talked to recently, was Sean Gelly, who kind of disappeared last year. He wasn't at the alternate site. They felt their top pitchers could work out at home while their top hitters had to see live pitching. But it got me thinking, do you know who is the tallest person you ever faced? Do you remember the tallest pitcher you faced? And was it a real challenge?
Well, the one thing that I'll go back a little bit, I got to the big leagues in 1974. And that span that I was in the big leagues, pitchers weren't as tall as the average size of a pitcher now. I mean, if a guy's coming into a game and he isn't at least 6'2 or 6'3, something's really odd about that. I didn't face many tall guys. But the guys that I did face, the thing that I didn't like about it is it just seemed like they were a lot, and it's true, they are a lot closer to home plate than the shorter guys. I mean, I wanted to face guys like Jeff Brantley. I did not want to face Sean Gelly. I can't imagine what it would be like to face Gelly or Randy Johnson, where by the time they release the ball, it feels like they're just dropping the ball into the catcher's mitt. And at some point, you have to make a decision of whether you're going to swing at whatever they're throwing or not. So I can't remember a particular tall guy that I faced, but I liked facing the short guys. As far as I was concerned, that was a little bit easier for me.
Would you rather?
And by the way, Alex or Cole, I was disappointed that Sean Gelly wasn't in that group last year that was in Sacramento, because I just felt like if he was there, he might be closer to getting to the big leagues this year as opposed to next year. So I was a little disappointed that he didn't get to be in that group.
Would you rather face a guy like Sean Gelly in baseball, or get backed down by a guy like Sean Gelly on the basketball court at Case High in Racine, Wisconsin?
Oh, I would have done better against Sean Gelly at Case High on a basketball court, because I might have actually had the chance of dribbling around him and then at least scoring a basket. But it would be a great challenge. It really would to face a guy that tall standing in the batter's box.
I'm looking for a little former athlete insight on this one. The Giants got Donovan Solano in arbitration for $3.25 million versus his just under $4 million. I don't know if you had any experience talking to these guys after their arbitration hearings, but are there ever any bad or salty feelings after these kind of meetings?
Absolutely there is. And the reason is, it's not so much that you lose, it's what was said in those arbitration hearings that made you lose. Because the whole point is, and I'm not saying that this is what the Giants did to Donovan Solano, but I'm saying over the years, this is what organizations did to guys in arbitration, is you have to prove your case that Donovan Solano wasn't as good as his average was. And that's why he shouldn't make this amount of money. And then that's just part of arbitration. And it's one of the reasons why the Giants rarely go to arbitration. I mean, they went to arbitration with A.J. Pruszynski, for crying out loud. And that might have been the last one. Arbitration can really tick off a player as far as how he feels about the organization. I am under the impression that that's not the case with Donovan Solano. He said all the right things. I'm not mad. He's making more money now than he's ever made. But the answer to your question is absolutely. These arbitration cases can cause a lot of damage from players and how they feel about the team they're playing for.
Did you ever have to go to it?
I didn't. I was really lucky. I signed a 6-year contract with the Indians that took me away from having to worry about arbitration. I probably wouldn't have had the nerve to go through arbitration. I'd have probably been one of those easy guys that said, yeah, that's fine. I'll play for that.
We talked to him today. He, to his credit, he was like, look, I was in AAA a couple years ago. Like, this is all a blessing for me. And he understood. He said he took a risk and he lost that case. Could have settled before that for less. The tough part for me, and you mentioned the name, I hate having to write stories where you go, Donovan Solano, who's like, by all accounts, very well liked in the clubhouse, Donnie Barrels, he had some huge hits for them the last couple of years, hit 326 and then 330. First guy to go to arbitration since AJ Pierzynski. So it's just a weird thing to write that sentence.
Yeah, it is. And I don't think, Donovan Solano is 100% behind this. It's probably his agent that's 100% behind it. And then he talks Donovan Solano into doing it. And Donovan Solano has every right to do it. But also, if you're a good agent, you have to explain to your client that, are you going to be okay with losing? Because there's a good chance that we're going to lose. And then accept it and then move on. And it really sounds like that's exactly what he's done. He's a good guy. I mean, I know you've dealt with him. And he is a good guy, and you pull for guys like him.
Is the implication there that AJ Pierzynski is not a good guy?
Well, I liked AJ Pierzynski when he was with the Giants, and Mike and I defended AJ Pierzynski a lot. It was after he left where, we really had to defend him, and now we run into him from time to time, or we used to when baseball was normal, because he does games, I think, on FS1. So Cole, no, you're not going to put me in the corner with AJ Pierzynski. You're not. Nice try.
We just got the promotional quote for this episode. I like AJ Pierzynski, Dwayne Kuiper. Done.
Well, it was your sister who dubbed him Double Playinski.
So there are differing feelings in the Kuiper household.
Yeah, exactly.
That's one of those where everybody on Twitter, every time he does a game, probably is losing it. And in the booth, you guys are like, hey, good to see you.
Yeah, there isn't anything that we've said over the years that could possibly change the minds of a lot of Giants fans about AJ Pierzynski. But, he put some of that on himself by doing some really weird stuff.
Since we talked to him, I think they've signed, I don't know, three or four guys. But the main one, Aaron Sanchez, who in 2016 was just electric, one of the best pitchers in the American League, led the American League in ERA, 200-something strikeouts, hasn't stayed healthy. But, the last time he pitched, he was part of that combined no-hitter in Houston a couple weeks before he had shoulder surgery. Seems like he's going to be in the rotation. I don't think he's thrown yet since he got into camp, but I know he's an American League guy, so maybe you haven't seen a whole lot of him. But what did you think of that addition?
Well, I remember the one game he started against the Giants at Oracle Park, and he was Mike and I were like, wow, who is this guy? And I think he went on to have really a great season. And then you're right. A guy like that's in the other league, and you lose track of him. Although you look at box scores, and all of a sudden he's hurt and he's not pitching. And then he becomes a far hand guy. He does. And I'm sure a lot of this signing had to do with the session he had in front of the scouts, and his velocity was spiked up to, I don't know what I read, 98.
98.
And all of a sudden he becomes really interesting for Farhan. And then, like I said, he becomes a Farhan guy, because Farhan believes, and so does Gabe Kapler, that they've got the people in that clubhouse, the coaching staff, that can turn this guy into what Kevin Gausman was last year. And I'm sure that's what they're hoping for. And if it does happen, then all of a sudden, maybe the National League West becomes just a little bit tighter. And that's what you have to hope for.
I've been saying we're one Aaron Sanchez away from competing with the Dodgers.
No, you're not. You're not saying it with a straight face, Cole. I know that. I know you. You've tried to bait your father over the years on a number of different things. And Aaron Sanchez is not going to be the difference whether the Giants get the postseason or not, but he could be a part of a group that could do that.
All right.
But the one thing we need, and I know this is not a topic, is between now and opening day, we need to have the Players Association agree to expanded teams, expanded postseason teams. That needs to happen. And also the DH, whether you like it or not, Cole, needs to happen. And I'm not talking about permanently. I'm talking about for this year. That needs to happen.
The expanded playoffs until the NL West is more competitive?
Well, it brings the Giants a little closer to being able to say, yeah, we got a shot at postseason if you have expanded playoffs. I mean, look, I'm not writing this team off that they can't do it without expanded playoffs, but it would certainly make it a lot more interesting.
I think last year it was like 2 hours before the opener that they announced it. So,
there is hope then.
We'll be keeping our ear to the ground on that one.
Yeah, well, as well-liked as the Players Association and the owners, as much as they like each other, who knows what's going to happen.
Speaking of having a group of guys coming together, for a lot of fans the past few years, there's been quite a few names, quite a few faces on the field that they might not recognize. It's a new brand of San Francisco Giants baseball then. The Giants baseball for the past 20 years since we started playing at Oracle Pac Bell AT&T Park. And to help with that, we're now getting names on the back of the jerseys. Fans have had a visceral reaction to this, viscerally negative. From what I've read, some people are kind of blasé about it. Some people don't think it's a big deal. I don't understand what all the hoopla about names on the back is. I think it looks just fine with them. But what do you guys think?
To me, it doesn't matter. Because for the most part, what we see when we're broadcasting and what you see on TV is the front of the jersey. And you're going to see the back of the jersey, obviously, when guys start running around. Is it a Giants tradition? Well, it's probably a Giants tradition since 2000. So then it's really not a tradition. The Giants had names on the back of their jerseys at Candlestick. I don't really know what the big deal is. Clearly, it's made for people who are going to be in the stands. So, I mean, I think you should look at it this way. The Giants are putting the names in the back of their jerseys for people who are going to be at the ballpark. Well, then they must think people are going to be at the ballpark. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think I've actually changed my mind on that in the last day. At first, when I saw the video they put out, I was a little like, you should be able to know who most of the guys are. And if you're watching the game, Dwayne's going to call them out. Mike's going to call them out as they make plays. And then I was watching, they put out like a 3-minute highlight reel for the media every day of the workout. And today was the first time where I saw a couple faces where I actually didn't recognize the guy, which, it's my job to know everything about this team. And it took me a little bit to recognize a couple guys who were playing catch. And it just made me think a little bit, like, they did have 64 guys a couple years ago. I think they used 45 last year in 60 games. So I don't think it's a big deal, like you said. I will know all of them when the season starts. I think we all will. But there's a percentage of people who are going to go to the ballpark who will not know half the roster, and especially because it changes so much. So I think it's okay.
I saw, Alex, the same video you saw. And there were a couple occasions where I wanted the guy to turn around just a little bit more so I could figure out who it was, right? So I agree with you. That's a great way to explain why, it's probably a good idea right now, given the way the roster is going to be probably for the next couple of years.
All right, Dwayne. Well, thank you as always for joining us. As we sign out here, I'll remind people, subscribe if you can, leave a review. And I have one more question for you because you're going to Scottsdale on the way out here. What is your first stop in Scottsdale? I think most people have an idea when they land in town where they go first.
The first place I'm going to go to is the ballpark, just to get myself acclimated with what the new rules are. Where do I park? Where do I walk in? Do I get my temperature taken? Is somebody going to stick something really far up my nose? I know this is going to sound really odd, but on my way to where I'm going to house myself, I'm going to stop at the Starbucks I usually go to and find out in the morning, because I get up early, am I allowed to, is it open? What time do you open? Do I have to sit outside? Is there partial seating inside? And then move on to where I'm going to go after that. I'm not going to dine in any restaurants inside. If I go out with some friends, maybe I'll do it outside. But it'll certainly be done with a mask on. That's not very exciting, Alex.
I was hoping for salty.
Maybe you were thinking, am I going to go to this restaurant or that restaurant? May happen in a couple of weeks.
I was willing to bet your answer was going to be AJ's, the grocery store. That was our old stomping grounds when I was a little grom going to spring training.
Well, I'll tell you this, Cole. One of the protocols, and Alex is really going to be upset with this, is like when we do the game on Sunday at the ballpark, there's no food. You have to bring your own food. I will stop at AJ's and get my food for my Sunday meal because I love that place.
That used to be the most important part of spring training for me was all of a sudden it was just me and dad and I got to have all the junk food I wanted. So we would clear the shelves off at this AJ's grocery store. Cheese balls, Sour Patch Kids, chocolate, Pringles. It was incredible.
And do you remember the speech I gave you?
What? Don't tell your mother?
Don't tell your mom. Those are the most important words.
Well, anyway. What did you say, Salty Senorita or R&R or somewhere? You were going to be there right away just sitting on the patio, but that's a very responsible way to handle the weekend in Scottsdale.
Alex, the first place I go to that is moderately interesting in Scottsdale, I will send you a text and a picture.